You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 26 May. US markets closed today for Memorial Day. UK markets closed today for Spring Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. We had Nampak results. We got Sasol getting $3.9 billion from Transnet, T's and C's apply, and Supergroup announces their special dividend. Philip Short from Flagship Asset Management on how they're adjusting global portfolios in time of tariff and higher yields. Renee Swanepoel from Morningstar Investments, staying steady in times of uncertainty. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlab Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, Capitec is 6.8 billion rand away from overtaking First Rand as most valuable bank on the JSE. Frankly, it's just a day or two of outperformance could see it overtake. Business day, the FSCA finds no evidence of dodgy trade in Matengu shares. Minor alleged companies such as Sable Exploration and Mining and Liberty Coal were artificially lowering its share price. Morning markets, US was red on Friday, S&P down 0.7, NASDAQ off 0.9%. The East is mostly red, Sydney up 0.6, and then Tokyo down a quarter, Hong Kong down 1.1, and Tencent off 1.5%. Commodities mixed, gold futures green, 3,374, Brent at 64.91. On the red side is platinum at 1,092, and palladium at 1,012. The Rand is 17.82, Bitcoin 109,700, and top 40 opening call, green open, 1,025 points. That is 1.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. Nampak results out on Friday. My sense is, I mean, this is a turnaround story and it seems to be moving ahead. I mean, obviously, a struggling economy and consumer is not helping. Your take on those numbers and the turnaround strategy?
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I mean, don't take away from management. I mean, it is not easy, and you know, the SA Inc. business is tough. I mean, we all know the local and domestic issues they have. But to turn this business around, where you know, effectively a year ago, they had a loss of 130 odd million rand, report a profit of 3 billion. I mean, that's a really good turnaround, and you never see Mr. Roo. I think he's stepping down now.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to, you know, kudos to him. And I just, maybe it tells a bigger story. Maybe it tells a better story that on the ground floor there are certainly better things happening on the SA Inc. space. And I just had a quick glance this morning. I mean, the stock is cheap. I mean, it's trading on a PE of, I think, about 5. Mm. So notwithstanding that, you know, it is those who are looking for a little bit of a recovery story in the local economy, I think, look no further than this.
And I take your point. I mean, it's tough being an SA consumer, perhaps not as tough as we always think. I mean, less tough than a year ago, I suppose, is the big picture. What about Supergroup? They've announced their dividend from the sale of the Australian asset. That's going to be 16 Rand 30. The share's what? 30 Rand on Friday. Is there, I mean, the rump, is there value in the rump that'll remain listed in the Supergroup space?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, for shareholders, I mean, this was flagged, I think, end of last year, sometime in December. So, I mean, it was just waiting for approval, I think, from the Saab and from the Australian shareholders as well. So, yeah, a nice chunk of change. Those special divvies, it's a nice sort of kicker for local shareholders. But, yeah, I get your point as well when it comes to, you know, what is actually remaining left for Supergroup shareholders. I mean, is there much growth left? I'd say they are streamlining the business a little bit, but you know, using selling assets to pay off debts, etc., and to pay special divvies is obviously not going to be the best solution for growth aspects. So, I mean, I'm cautious on this one, Simon. I think it's just be a little bit cautious on the logistics business.
Yeah, logistics tough space. Sasol's getting 3.9 billion from Transnet. T's and C's. There's going to be a possible appeal. But I also remember, I'm old enough to remember Comair getting a billion from SAA, except they never got the billion. This is different, perhaps.
Yeah, it is different. You know, I chuckled when I saw this come across the wires. I think it was after close on Friday because, you know, it doesn't rain a pause or Cecil. You know, when everything goes wrong, it goes wrong. I mean, the Lake Charles stories and hurricanes and the Gulf and everything else goes wrong. And all of a sudden, you know, a couple of positive hits in the last couple of weeks. So, look, it's. I think if I did a quick sort of calculation this morning, I mean, this is about almost 10%, 9% of its market cap. So this is very nice. And I think timing-wise, it's certainly after they just received news that of a $51 billion government guarantee. So certainly, I think the timing was not coincidence. So I mean, I would argue that they probably will get it. I mean, you're right; there is going to be appeals, but nevertheless, I mean, these long-suffering Sasol shareholders, I mean, they deserve a break, Simon.
They do. And then to be clear, they're also making some money. Cecil's been moving higher.
Yeah.
It's as you say, it's been long and suffering. Quick last one. The US tenure, 4.518 on my screen.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when it went through 4.5, not the first time, but one of the, you know, more recently, you and I were on air. We were kind of spooked by it. It's kind of become the normal, which is not lacquer, but it has kind of become 4.5 is now just where it is, which is not a good thing. Mm.
It has become the normal, but it shouldn't become the normal because the more it creeps upwards, the more the cost of U.S. debt increases, the harder it is for the U.S. government to pay. It becomes a larger part of the debt payments. And we all know the stories here in South Africa. So, I mean, I can't believe we're talking about the world's biggest economy having a similar situation, obviously, on a slightly different scale. But nevertheless, now I do think it's warning signs. And I saw the headlines this morning walking in here. Once again, Mr. Trump flip-flopping. I don't know how you make any policy decisions as a company in America right now. But I'd certainly stick it on your watch list. And we've said it before. It's a very important number. Watch that 30-year as well, which is now over 5%.
Yeah.
And this is, once again, Simon, just quickly, this is the benchmark for borrowing around the world. So it's a very important number to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Friday, Trump put 50% tariffs on Europe, and then yesterday, last night, took it away, as you say. I don't know how you do business. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Philip Short, Flagship Asset Management. Philip, appreciate the time. It's been a turbulent year, tariff uncertainty and a whole bunch aside. One of the outcomes of that is you're making tweaks to your worldwide flexible fund. First point of call, reducing equity exposure from 87 to 73. Is a lot of that reduction less US equity?
Yes, that attributed almost all to reducing U.S. equities to other markets, Japan, Western Europe and U.K., as well as to cash.
How much cash? I mean, is it a sizable cash amount?
I think it's about 20-odd% now sitting in foreign FX cash.
Okay, I mean, to me, intuitively, seems like a lot. And that's just, I suppose, opportunity. I mean, if markets sell off again, as well as some uncorrelation with equities.
That's true. We do expect a bit of a pocket of weakness in the next couple of months, but with a more healthier outlook for H2. So we will be looking to take opportunity of buying on weakness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You also, in a note you put out, said you've increased diversification of the stocks, which, if I'm interpreting that correctly, perhaps a little bit less in each stock.
No, there would be some clear exits, but it would be into, I think that was referring to more from a geographic point of view.
Okay. And in terms of sort of sectors, are there sectors that you're sort of taking less of or more of, or you're being sort of neutral across the different sectors?
Yeah. So we look at more at a very stock level and not so much on a sector level. We try to stay, you know, what part of our process is to stay largely in line on a sector basis. So we are cognizant of sector exposure and then try to put all our focus into picking stocks.
Okay, so very much more of a bottom-up approach and saying, you know, finding those quality counters at quality prices.
We actually incorporate both bottom-up and top-down. Okay. So if we look at part of the reduction of our U.S. exposure in Q1, started with not being as optimistic of the U.S. in the short term, And then looking at other areas where we are optimistic on from a top-down point of view. And once we've identified those areas, then we go and with a bottom-up approach to find the stocks in the areas that we like.
Okay, makes sense. So sort of identify sort of areas or categories and then do the bottom-up. Are you style agnostic or do you sort of focus on particular styles in terms of the strategy?
No, we're style agnostic, which means we incorporate all styles. You know, certain styles can stay in favor for a long period of time and you can lose out on opportunities by having a certain style. And we think we're quite competent incorporating all styles. So in that sense, we are style agnostic.
I'm imagining this is a dollar-denominated portfolio. You mentioned Japan. There are undoubtedly some great assets in Japan. Currency then, however, comes into play. Do you sort of try and manage that or is it just a part of the risk profile?
In short, we incorporate that into our thinking, you know, and we will also be looking at GDP and inflation as part of a top-down approach. Mm-hmm. But we're very aware that when we are buying a certain stock, to what currencies we're exposing ourselves to and the potential change in currency value against the dollar when we make the choice.
If you're worried about currency, is it more around walking away, reducing size, or just being cognizant of that potential risk?
Look, FX is extremely difficult to forecast, but sure. It's being cognizant of what could possibly drive it, into which direction are you exposing yourself to. You know, we'd like to plan for all different scenarios, for many scenarios going into an event or into a buy case, so that when something does happen, we know what the effects will be and we can make a decision very quickly.
Yeah, and I take your point. Predicting FX is a hard game if we're being polite about it. You've done the 20% cash, the equity down from 87 to 73, particularly exiting US. Fairly significant changes. Is this a big change in the fund or is this sort of something that will, I don't know, happen from time to time as circumstances change? This time it happens to be around tariffs, but there have been others over the years.
Yeah, I think maybe just, I would say this is probably a once a year type of occasion. Maybe over the next 3 years, it will be once or twice. You know, it's not a given what we'll do, but in my experience, it has been averaged out at about once a year.
Okay, about once a year. We leave it there. Philip Short, Flagship Asset Management. Always appreciate the insights.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you made changes to your offshore portfolio as a result of the tariff wars, whatever it might want to call it? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Renee Swanepoel, Head of Sales at Morningstar Investment Management South Africa. Renee, always appreciate the early morning time. Staying steady in times of uncertainty often sounds easy, not necessarily so practical. In a recent note you put out, you make the point that the largest two-day decline for the U.S. since March 2020, which of course was pandemic, was April 3 and 4 earlier, so what, that less than 2 months ago. I remember back then, it really did feel kind of end of worldish, but this is what markets will do. They will do some crazy sell-offs at points in time.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. And it is exactly like you say. If you look at the 3rd and the 4th of April, it's been the worst two-day stretch since 2020. But if you just fast forwarded a few days up until that 9th of April, when we saw the pause in tariffs, we had that big snapback in markets. So things, and if you look on the surface, if you had to open your spreadsheets on the 1st of April, the 3rd, the 4th, the 9th, and then at the end of April, it seems like nothing really happened. But in between in April, it was a very volatile month.
And that's what happens. And you use the 2022 bear market as kind of a sense of perspective. And for many folks, that was the, you know, if you'd only been in the market, a couple of years or so, that was your first bear market. It was grinding. It was horrid. But it recovered. This is what markets do. You make the point that, you know, volatility is the price of entry.
It's exactly. And if you look at 2022, I think most of us really struggle to remember 2022, if we think about tariffs, it really dominates our mind now. But 2022 was a terrible year. We had equities and bonds sell off in lockstep. So clients in a global cautious portfolio something where you think you've got a shorter time horizon, you're a little bit more cautious or risk averse, had a sell-off close to 10% in some of the bond instances.
Mm.
And what happened, what we saw there when we looked at some of the Morningstar research on flows into the markets and asset classes, a lot of flows, both in the US and locally, went into your more cash-like or money market instruments. And what happened, if we look at 2023 and 2024, both years of 20-plus returns in the equity market. So moving to cash, missing out on two really, really good years.
And that's, I suppose, the key lesson, which is, I mean, we tend to focus on markets on the short term. We're looking at prices, never mind daily. We can look at them hourly and per minute in many senses. But we need to remind ourselves that we are those long-term investors and that what happened on the 3rd and 4th of April 2025, we're going to have forgotten about in a decade or two.
Probably. And if you look at some of the research we've done and you look at the daily returns, even in the Aussie, same story in the S&P, but if you look at it, you've got a 50-50% chance that your performance or return for that day is going to be positive or negative. So it really is a flip of a coin if you look at your statements on a daily basis. And if you think about loss aversion, which is a behavioral bias that I think most of us face in markets, is a loss hurts twice as much as a gain. So if you think about that 50-50 chance, if you look at it on a daily basis, any good feeling you're going to get from the market's going to be wiped out by any negative return.
Yeah, but you'll be elated one day and then doubly depressed the very, very
exactly.
next.
Exactly. You'll forget about the good day.
And you do, absolutely. There's a fun stat out there, which is always, and it comes up from time to time, that if you miss the top 10 best days in the market, your return is markedly lower than if you just stayed invested. You've got an even more fun one that since 2002, and this is Morningstar US Market Index, 7 of the best 10 trading days happened within 2 weeks of the 10 worst days. In other words, there's almost a back to your sort of manic depression, manic excitement. If you're worried on the worst days and you get out, you're more likely to miss those good ones.
Exactly. And we even did some research. If you look at the same market index, so you take the top 20 worst days since 2002, and the 3rd and 4th of April are within, not in the top 10, but they're in the top 20. So we're going to remember them for a while. But if you look at the forward one, so from that low point, what's your forward 1, 3, and 5 year return? And when you look at it on a table, you see a lot of green. So it just reminds us that sometimes the best days really come after the worst, although it doesn't feel like it, but it exactly comes to that point of, if you miss those best days, look at the 9th of April, just after the 3rd and 4th. It was the best day since the global financial crisis, one of the best days in this time. You would have missed out on quite a lot.
Yeah, you'd be significantly underperforming. And of course, that impacts your long-term return. To end, you have a great quote from Ken Griffin. He's the founder of Citadel. And he's talking around, all my losses are tuition. In a sense, that we should be learning from it rather than panicking and getting that anger. If we can't sort of manage it, we're going to have a very, very short stay in the market.
Yeah, and it almost feels like the market, especially in April, has been collecting some tuition bills. They humble most of us. And I think what separates successful investors isn't really the absence of losses, so having no losses when you look at your portfolio, but it's really the ability to learn from those losses, stay grounded, and stay committed to that investment process and think long-term. That's very important for us at Morningstar, long-term investing, coming back to fundamentals. And the market is always teaching, like you said, but the question really is will we stay in our seats and keep learning from some of the mistakes that investors make in the markets?
I like that as well. We're not going to avoid the losses. It's how we manage them, both emotionally but also in terms of our portfolio. And the short answer is best off to do nothing. Renee Swanepoel, head of sales, Morningstar Investment Management South Africa. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Skulk Lowe, PSG Old Oak, on Friday, talking global bond yields amongst things. But I was picking on his thoughts as an equity man. How does he think about it? And we asked what your thinking on higher global yields was. Just mentioned with Nick Kunzer as well. And it certainly is concern. 60% of you said bad news all round. A quarter said all will be fine. The rest said just ignoring it for now.
Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a 5-star review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Sustainability in new homes is no longer niche.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.